And the funny thing is that this was like the major coup at Rochester Institute of Technology for me to get this this apprenticeship with Bernice Abbott. And but I didn't tell anyone. I didn't tell a soul, not even my history of photography teacher, because I was afraid that I would jinx it away. And then what would I tell people, right? So I didn't tell anybody. And at the very last minute, I told my history of photography teacher, and he about fell over and told me that I need to take really good journal, really keep a journal.
This photography podcast is brought to you by Frames, quarterly printed photography magazine. Here is your today's host, W. Scott Olsen, with another fascinating conversation.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another podcast from Frames Magazine. My name is Scott Olsen, and today we are going to be talking about one of the coolest projects that I have seen come along in a long time. We're talking street photography, but we're talking street photography big, projected big, massive projection on in a football field-sized parking lot, 3 stories tall, 80 feet wide. This is photography writ large. In other words, we're talking with Julia Dean. Julia Dean is a photographer, educator, writer. She's the founder and executive director of the Los Angeles Center of Photography, as well as, prior to that, the Julia Dean Photo Workshops. She worked with Bernice Abbott. She was a photo editor at the AP in New York. She moved 38 times in 50 years. She's visited 45 countries. Her work has been all over the place. Bachelor of Science degree in photography. She's got a Master of Arts degree in journalism from the University of Nebraska. She's written a children's book. She's in the process of writing a memoir at the moment called Racing for Life. It's a career that should be the envy of all of us, and a project that I just think is absolutely knock your socks off fantastic. Julia, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing today?
Hey, Scott. I'm doing well. Thank you so much for the invitation. I'm so honored to be here.
Well, this is a project that is just really near and dear to my heart. And frankly, I'm jealous because April 27th, 2024 is when this thing's going to debut, and I won't be able to out there. And that's going to be a terrible day for me. I'm going to be sitting here in Fargo thinking I ought to be in LA. So, I mean, folks, if you're anywhere near LA on April 27th, get down to see this. Let's just jump right into the career here, because I want to lead up to the LA project, to Street LA, and to projecting LA. You began loving photography, you say, when you were gifted a camera. And then you got a degree in photography, and then a little tweak over into journalism at Nebraska. So give me the how did photography get under your skin story. How did you know this was where you were going to spend your life?
That's a good question. Well, I don't think I actually knew. I just sort of fell into it and loved it and went from there. At the age of 10, my parents gave me a camera. And so everybody, all my friends knew that Julia was a person that took the pictures all the time. And then when I was in high school, I found out that you could actually take a photography class in college. And so I declared my major journalism just so I could take photography. But then I ran out of photography classes. So then I transferred and went to RIT, where I could have more photography classes. And that's where the education started.
Mm-hmm. What was it about taking the images that spoke to you? Was it the documentary side? Were you doing some fine artwork or what?
Well, it's, when I was a kid, I was just taking pictures of my friends and everybody around me and same in college. And I didn't really have any idea what I wanted to do with photography. And I didn't even really understand the genres that there were out there. I was just a very young person and learning about photography. And it was when I took a history of photography class that I really started learning about photography and who came before us. And I learned about Bernice Abbott and all the other women that were pioneers as women and photographers in the early days. And I learned later, after I'd learned about her in my class, coincidentally, I met these folks that had met her biographer, and they found out that she needed an apprentice. And so, long story short, I became Bernice Abbott's apprentice. It's a funny story about how it all happened. But so that was a huge thing for me. I got to live and study under her for a year.
Yeah, did you just knock on the door and say, hi, I want to work for you?
kind of, except she lived in Maine and I was in Rochester going to school at the time. And so when I learned about her wanting an apprentice, I wrote to her biographer, Hank O'Neill, and then he told me to write her, and he set the whole thing up for me. And then I drove all night for 15 straight hours to get there because I couldn't afford to stay in a hotel. And I had a meeting with her, you know, in Maine at 9 o'clock in the morning. And she I guess she liked me because I didn't have much experience. and she hired me to be her apprentice. And the funny thing is that this was like the major coup at Rochester Institute of Technology for me to get this, this, you know, apprenticeship with Bernice Abbott. And, but I didn't tell anyone, I didn't tell a soul, not even my history of photography teacher, because I was afraid that I would jinx it away. And then what would I tell people? Right. So I didn't tell anybody. And at the very last minute, I told my history of photography teacher, and he about fell over and, you know, told me that I need to take really good journal, you know, really keep a journal and write everything down that she says and everything that we do. And so I did, and I've since put a book together from it all. It's called The Last Apprentice, because I was her last one.
Was that your introduction to Maine? Because you've got this gorgeous children's book out there, A Year on Monegan Island, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Was that the doorway to that?
Well, not really. I mean, it's funny because I lived in Maine two different decades. I lived there in the 70s with Bernice, and then a decade later, I came back and I was teaching at the Maine Photo Workshops. And that's how that that book came about, because when I was teaching, one of my students was the was a publisher at Houghton Mifflin, and she really liked my work, and she asked me if I wanted to do a children's book, and I knew about Monhegan Island from an earlier trip that I'd taken out there, and I said, sure, I'd love to, and I have just the thing, just the place, because she wanted me to document a special place so that. It was a children's book for young teens, and they were supposed to learn how other people live around the world or in the United States that's similar and different than them.
It's a gorgeous, I mean, the photography is just absolutely gorgeous.
Well, thank you so much.
But if I read your website correctly, when they first said, do you want to do this project, you said, give me some time to become a better photographer. What does that mean?
Well, what happened was in 1977, I was at RIT, and my friend Eleanor and I went on a camping trip. We had like a week off in between our summer school classes. And so we went on this trip, and then she said, hey, you want to go to Monhegan Island? I have a friend who lives there. And so she took me there, and we were young in our, you know, early 20s, and I loved it so. And I remember thinking, oh, if I ever become a better photographer, I'd like to come back here and shoot. Well, then a decade passes, right? And I am a little bit better photographer a decade later. And so when I was offered this this book, I said, yes, I'd love to, and let's do Monhegan Island. And they liked the idea. So that's where that went.
Oh, it's such a cool book. So, okay, Pete, you don't just turn around on a Tuesday afternoon then and say, I'm going to start, you know, being a photo editor for the AP. Tell me about the journalism career. Tell me about moving into photo editing.
It seems like everything in my life, I just decided, I decided that it's something I want to do, and I sort of just go for it. And it's kind of, I look back on it, and I wonder how I pulled some of these things off. But I wanted to go to Lake Placid during the 1980 Olympics because I wanted to get a job in journalism, and I didn't have any money to run around the country to try to get a job. So I thought, well, maybe if I go to Lake Placid, you know, all the newspapers and wire services will come to Lake Placid. And sure enough, that's what happened. I got a bartending job and I got a place to live when everybody else was getting kicked out of their places in Lake Placid. I was really lucky. And I got a job kind of as a gopher for AP. And they liked me because I work really hard. I'm a hard worker. And I just tried to do, I wanted to work like double shifts just because I wanted to be there all the time. And so they offered me a job from there to come to New York. And New York was never a place that I had in mind, but that's what I ended up doing.
But that's okay. Then what took you from now, you know, the big leap coming up here, you move out to LA, to Venice Beach, to that area and fall in love with that area. Was that a vacation that just turned into the rest of your life, or was this more intentional?
I guess it's kind of a little of both, because had I come here at any other time to Los Angeles at any age, I would have been here since then, because I love it here so much. But I didn't find this place until my late 30s. And that's when I moved here. The joke is I moved here just within a few months of my student, Alan Shaben, who works for the LA Times. And he came out at 24 with a job with the LA Times. And I came out with no job and, you know, hardly any money. And I had to sort of jumpstart my career once I got here. But I was determined to be here.
Oh, and what a success you've made of it. What gave you, I mean, the Julia Dean Photo Workshops is just a magnificent story. I mean, and folks, you got to go to the website, juliadean.com, because the narrative of this thing coming together, you know, with hiring and then, you know, backers, you know, that say they'll be a partner, then back out and try to, you know, steal employees, this kind of, it's a great, great story. But, you know, it's a great story because it all turned out well. Tell me, well, first where the idea came from, and then run me through a brief history, because the Julia Dean Photo Workshops then becomes the Los Angeles Center of Photography, which then becomes this huge thing that's about to happen.
Well, yes. So I was a college teacher for about 12 years before I moved out to Los Angeles at various different places, because I've never been anywhere too long. I mean, I have now, but I hadn't been before. And when I first came here, I had to find some freelance work and I had to try to teach. And so I was teaching at different colleges, but I was also starting my own workshop. So I'd run around town. For like 4 years, I did this, ran around town putting up little flyers that said, you want to take a photography class? Call Julia Dean. And then they'd tell me what they wanted. And I'd get a few people together that wanted a flash class or a few people together that wanted a basic class. And that's how it all started. And then eventually I started to get a little following, and it became a little difficult in the home, because my partner, Jay, he would have to go to the movies or go somewhere every time I had a class. And so we sort of decided that maybe I should just start my own school somewhere other than my home. And so that's how it all started, the Julia Dean Photo Workshops. And then a dear friend, Ingrid Hanser, lent me money and did so for a decade to keep the place going. And that's pretty much how the Julia Dean Photo Workshops got started.
And was it mostly street photography then?
No, it was hardly. It wasn't street photography until probably a decade later. But I, in the beginning, the reason we named it the Julia Dean Photo Workshops is simply because I was the only teacher back then. And, you know, over the 22 years that I was there, it was built from that to, you know, 150 classes a year. And so and a lot of teachers, you know, but back then it was just me. And so that's, again, why it was named the Julia Dean Photo Workshops. It's just kind of built over the years, you know. And so in the beginning, I was teaching, you know, black and white photography and basic and flash and, you know, different things. And then I started to add lots of classes that I didn't want to teach, that I wasn't qualified to teach, like maybe an alternative processes class, or maybe somebody came in to teach a business class. So I just started adding them and bringing people in to teach, you know, for me. So that's how that started.
Oh, it certainly took off. And then you added travel stuff. I mean, travel classes. I'm looking again, you know, at the resume here. Paris, Prague, Budapest, Transylvania, Morocco, Buenos Aires, Montevideo. I mean, it just goes on and on. You do like to travel. You do like to keep moving.
Well, I really did in my 30s, especially. I was, it was my 20s, I traveled across America a lot. In my 30s, I traveled around the world a lot, and both on like very little money. So this is why my memoir might be kind of a little funny, because of the stories that you have traveling around the world with no money. it makes for good stories. The travel workshops that you bring up, I did 25 of them in a 10-year period when it was still the Julia Dean Photo Workshops. And I did that on top of like my 80 hours a week. This place nearly killed me off, to tell you the truth. But I did it because I really needed to shoot. I used to be, before then, before I started the Julia Dean Photo Workshops, everybody that knew me knew that I was a documentary photographer, a photojournalist. I worked on stories of social concern around the world for nonprofits and relief groups and religious newspapers and whoever I could get jobs from, right? And when I came to LA and I started my own school, and I was working so many hours a week, there's no way that I could go away for a month or two or three. My last big, big trip was 6 months, and that was in India. And so, you know, everything had to change. And I was like, what kind of photographer am I now that I'm not doing the socially concerned stuff around the world? So that's when I started taking people on all these workshops around these big cities so I could shoot on the streets. And so I kind of became I labeled myself kind of also a street photographer. When I started taking people on all those travel workshops. And then one day I woke up and I went, geez, I don't really have to travel to shoot on the streets. I live in Los Angeles. You know, there's a lot of good streets to shoot here. So then I, in 2010, I declared myself a street shooter, street photographer, here in Los Angeles. So that's what I've been doing ever since.
Do you really need to declare yourself as any kind of a photographer?
I guess not, but I guess I'm so used to calling myself a documentary photographer or photojournalist in the past. And I am that because I just have been working 9 years on a story, on a documentary story. So I am still doing that. But the thing I do on a, you know, weekly basis is a street photography. So, if people want to know what kind of photographer I am, I'll tell them that.
You know, there is not a big difference between, you know, doing the project you did, for example, on child labor or documentary or street photography. I mean, it is all at one level socially proactive, you know, no matter what label you put over it, don't you think?
Right. Yes. Yes, I do. Yeah. And I like that you brought up the child labor project. It was, I worked on it a long time ago, but, I raised $150,000 through a fiscal sponsor to send 6 photographers around the world to cover stories on child labor. I love collaborative projects. I love bringing talented people together, and I love working on behalf of other photographers as well. And so that was a really cool project. It took longer to raise the money than I had hoped. And so it didn't have the gigantic impact, but it had little impacts along the way. So it was pretty great.
Well, what a wonderful transition. I mean, tell me about the Street LA project. You know, you talk about your love of collaboration. You talk about working with others. I mean, here's just a shining example of it.
Thank you. I am so excited about this. Well, a couple of years ago, I started what I'm calling the LA project. And basically what the LA project is it's just kind of an umbrella for everything that I do or offer to photographers or people in LA. And right now what comes under that umbrella is my classes. I teach street and documentary classes. And I also co-lead with Daniel Sackheim, our collective, our very serious group of street photographers. We're called Street LA, and that's our collective. And then the third thing that falls under the LA project is Projecting LA. And the next one is, as you said, April 27th, 2024. We had one in 2022. I've been spending the last year raising money for the next one. And the next one is then in April.
Let's take just a quick break. We hope very much that you are enjoying today's episode. The very fact that you are listening to this podcast suggests that photography means a lot to you. And if that's the case, you might want to have a look at Frames, quarterly printed photography magazine. We truly believe that excellent photography belongs on paper. Visit readframes.com to find out more about our publication. And now, back to today's conversation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I can't wait. And we'll talk about Projecting LA in just a second. Talk to me about the power of this collective, though. Tell me, you know, you mentioned, you know, Dan Sackheim. We had a lovely podcast with him just a short while ago. Tell me about the power of a collective, of being a member of it, of participating in it. I mean, you guys hold each other accountable. You go out every week. You do, you know, a lot of critiques of each other's work, that kind of stuff. Why band together with what is finally, you know, a solo act, and that is pressing a shutter release?
Yes, great question. I think that this group, it's a really great group of people. And then we're always open to adding more people. It's an application process and the entire collective, you know, votes to see who gets in. But the group is, they're just really wonderful people and they're very supportive of one another and they can take critique. Dan and I lead it and, you know, everybody chimes in. And I just think that it, I think people like being a part of it so that it keeps them shooting on a weekly basis because we're very serious about it and we don't want people slacking off. So we want people to be serious shooters, to be, involved.
Oh, very cool. Frankly, that kind of community is something I think all of us benefit from. You know, even if you're dealing with photographers that are not exactly doing the work you're doing, to have that other set of knowledgeable and experienced eyes on your work, you know, can often open insights that we just don't have the ability to see as quickly as somebody else.
Yes, it's so true.
Tell me about the transition of the Julia Dean Photo Workshop into the Los Angeles Center of Photography.
Well, my joke is it was always kind of a nonprofit along the way, and because of that, it was very difficult to keep the place going, to tell you the truth, all along the way. And so I was always trying one thing or another to have something try to help us, and it kind of came down to, well, it looks like maybe becoming a nonprofit might be a smart move, because then we have a group of people who can become concerned about it versus just me and my manager. So it was a lot of work. I went to one of few things in my life where I couldn't even ask anybody for any help because it was me who knew the entire history. And so I had to I wrote the whole thing. It was almost as tedious and time consuming as writing my master's thesis. But it's I got it done, and it was a real relief when we got accepted as with a 501c3 status, and that way you can take donations that are tax deductible. And so it's been 2.5 years now since I have not been with LACP, and now I'm, like I say, running what I call the LA Project.
Right. Well, let's talk about projecting LA 2024. And, you know, as I said earlier, football field size parking lot, 3 stories tall, 80 feet wide. Why?
Did you say why? Okay, well,
yes.
I'll tell you, there's actually two reasons. And the most honest reason is because for about 9 years now, I've been photographing this wonderful man named Jose Hernandez, and he happens to be a homeless guy who lives in the Flower District. And I just met him along the way while I was shooting on the streets. And since then, we become friends over the years. And then about during the pandemic, he invited me to really tell his story in more depth. And so I've spent a lot of time with him, and I've gotten a lot of intimate pictures that, would be difficult for anybody else to get. And we become close. I go see him every week just as a friend, you know, and so I wanted a place to show these pictures because he was going to be featured in the first Projecting LA, you know, 25 pictures of him and his surrounding, you know, as you said, 80 feet wide and 3 stories tall. And I knew that he wouldn't come to an indoor event. He wouldn't come to an exhibition. And I've thrown so many exhibitions. I wanted to do something different. And that's the second reason. I wanted Jose to come, be able to come and feel comfortable. And I wanted to do something that I hadn't done before. And as running a school for so many years, you pretty much do everything because you have guest speakers and you have book signings and you have exhibits and, you know, all those things. I'd done so many of them already. What can I do that's different? Well, so then I said to Daniel Sackheim, I said, let's project this, you know, really big on the side of a wall from a great big parking lot. And Dan said, okay. And then once we jumped into it, we realized how much work and how much expense it was going to be, but we were determined, and it was just a remarkable event. And the next one's going to be even more so.
Well, I'm looking at the 2022 event. You've got that online. You've got that on YouTube. And it is just the superlatives fail me here. It is so, so good. But what did people say to see it that big and to make a huge, community event out of these images?
Well, yes. And the community, people kind of walked away with their mouths open, and we got a lot of response of people being so happy to sort of be in one space with all these different people from LA, because it's such a commuter city, all these people are from all over the place, and that was cool. And I think they just loved seeing this presentation. And the cool thing about the next year, the next April, 2024, is not only are we going to do the big outdoor event, but the Los Angeles Public Library System has come on board as a collaborator, and they're going to show our presentation once a month for a year after our outdoor event. And then we're going to invite photographers from the show to come in and then have a little roundtable discussion afterwards with the public. So I'm really excited about that as well.
How are they going to show the, because you had 30 in the last show. Are you going to have 30 in the new one?
Probably 35 in the new one. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So you've got 30 plus photographers. How's the library system going to present that on monitors, on frames, in what?
Well, no, because we'll the way that it's presented on April 27th, it's projected. It's a video, and it's the video that put all 35 of these photographers work together. Each photographer gets about 20 images, and then each one has a different music set to it. And then that's put together on a video seamlessly, and the whole thing last year took 47 minutes, but this one will probably take an hour.
Oh man, I'm even more jealous now. Okay.
Oh, but I'm sorry to answer your question. You ask how the library is going to show it. We're going to have a video, we're going to have a projector that we show it indoors. We can only afford the outdoor thing once, because the projector alone costs $8,000 just to rent for a night.
Oh my Lord.
Yeah, that's what I say.
Well, it is LA after all. Okay, but tell me about the site selection. Are you just walking along one day in this parking lot and you say, this is the place? Or, there's a lot of things that had to come together for this idea to become something you said, we're going to continue working on this.
Right. Well, I live downtown. I've lived downtown now for 12 years, ever since I declared myself a LA street shooter. And so I live in Chinatown now, though I've lived in three different places downtown. But I live in Chinatown now in this parking lot. I can actually see it right now while I speak to you. So it's kind of right out our back door. So that was easy. There's two or three or four really good parking lots. Well, there's several downtown, but it's easy to find a parking lot. It's not so easy to find a parking lot that has a big building with a white wall. So we were lucky.
I am looking at the mission statement for the LA project. You say, to document our changing city during a dynamic and challenging time in its history and share the work in innovative ways. I absolutely love that. And then you say, it's the collective work of 35 street documentary and news photographers comprised of students, emerging artists, and professionals. I would imagine that when you put out the call for this, suddenly you were inundated. Tell me how you picked 20 images from 35 photographers, which sounds like a lot, but really in that environment is not.
Well, we just had no idea how many submissions we would get, because it's not like asking for a black and white photography contest. It's not like a black and white photography contest where, thousands of people could enter that. But it's a contest where you have to send in 15 to 20 images about LA. So it either has to be street photography, it has to be picture stories that photojournalists work on, or documentary projects like my Jose story, or news, or daily news. And so those are the categories in which people send things in. And it all has to be done in LA County.
Do you need to be a resident of Los Angeles or that area?
No, No. I actually made a new friend who lives in Paris, who came in town for 3 months just to shoot for Projecting LA.
Oh man, weren't they afraid there were?
And so she entered her. Pardon,
I'd be afraid. I'd go spend the 3 months, and then you guys would say, "Lovely work, Scott," but no, thank you.
Well, I think that I don't know what the answer will be, because the jurors will be voting on all of these. But I think that she enjoyed herself immensely, mm-hmm. no matter what. Yes. And so, but we got so many, my friends included, we got so many great submissions. I mean, great stories. And it's going to be an outstanding show. I'm just so thrilled.
Well, if it's anything like the last one, I can guarantee you it's going to be outstanding. Tell me a little bit more about the people who come. So this is a roughly one hour video. People sit in folding chairs and watch it as if they're watching a movie. Do they want it to, you know, linger on individual images? Do they come back? You know, it's a really unique way of presenting street photography. And I'm wondering how people are handling the different kind of method.
Well, I'm not sure I understand your question. Could you ask again?
I'm looking at Joshua Stern's pictures from last time right now. And, you know, they're going by, you know, one every, I, you know, 10 seconds or whatever. And every now and then I get to one and say, no, wait, stop, go back. And, you know, I want to spend more time. Or, you know, if I've got an hour of these images going by, are you asking me to look at them as a gestalt, as a unified story? Or is it, you know, or do you intend it more as an anthology approach, just celebrating individual photographers and images? I would want to get back into all of these images really fast.
Well, I think that's a good reason to put it up on the web, like the one that you're looking at right now, because then people, after they see it once, I mean, it goes quickly. I mean, the 35 photographers, it's a 60 minute presentation, but it's 35 photographers times 20 pictures each, put together with music. And each photographer gets different music. So there's a stands out from the next person to the next person. You know, their name comes up, like, let's say, Julia Dean. And then here comes my 20 images, my street photography. Last year, I had two. I had my Jose story in the documentary category, and I had my street stuff in another category. But this year, I'm just having one. Everybody's just having one this year. That's pretty much how we decide, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I am looking at, you know, your contribution to last time, and you got to add a little bit of text to yours. So tell me, with the individual photographers, once you've selected their images, how collaborative is it with the music, with the order of the images, etc.?
Well, a lot of photographers like to sequence their own photographs, especially the photojournalists who have a story that they've shot. So I'm all open to having them sequence it in the manner that they want. A lot of people like my help, and I really love to sequence things, so I'm happy to help when people need it. The music, one of our producers does, and he's really good at it. And again, not that we aren't open to listening to what photographers might have in mind, too. So, yeah, it's kind of a combination.
What's been the single biggest challenge of pulling off this project?
Oh, raising the money is always the hardest thing. But, you know, with our budget, I raised all the money last year in 5 months, and we didn't have a fiscal sponsor. But I was crazy, like always. I get these ideas in my head, and I'm determined to make them happen despite the obstacles. And this year, things are better because I have a fiscal sponsor, Creative Visions, a real reputable foundation here in Los Angeles. And so all donations are tax deductible. So it's been easier to raise the money because of that. But we still have, I still have money to raise, but we still have a few months. So that's good.
Well, I mean, all of this can be found on the websites, and we certainly will have the URLs posted with this presentation. I'm really impressed. I wish I, you know, had known about this earlier. I would have sent in some pictures. I really, really wish that I could have been, or I could be there for this. But I am really also looking forward to seeing this appear on the web, because I just know, having seen the 2022, that this is going to be a knock your socks off show. Julia, you also wound up on this is a credit I forgot to mention at the beginning, on the Faces of Leica list. I don't know where I'm going with this, but, you know, the corporate sponsorship, is that a future for this project?
Well, Leica they helped us last year they helped us a little bit last year financially, and I think they'll probably maybe do that a little bit this year as well. We're still working on that. We're still working that out. But The Faces of Leica thing is I really love the Leica store here in Los Angeles. It's really beautiful, and all the people who work there are just so special and so nice. And when they had this idea about doing this Faces of Leica, I was really honored when I was invited to be a part of it. And it was just great fun. One man, Per Bernal, photographed 42 different photographers, and then Paris Chong from the curator at Leica, at the Leica Gallery, she curated it all. And then they had a show downtown in a really great gallery called Wren Gallery. And it was really fun. Oh my goodness. There were like hundreds of people there. It was really fun. And I've been a Leica user for a long time. Since 1981, I've been using Leica. So I'm a real Leica lover.
How many people show up for Projecting LA for the big public event?
Well, last year we think we had around 700, and this year we think it's going to be three times as big this year.
Really? Yeah, why three times as big?
Well, because it's the information's been out longer. People know about it more. There's more people involved, and we have a publicist that's going to let the world know about it. And so I think that it's just going to, the more people that know about it, the more people will come. Oh, and also another reason is, I don't know, I don't think I told you this, but some of the photographers in the show are personally invited by me. And one of them is Christina House, who is with the LA Times, and she won the Pulitzer this year for her story on a pregnant woman, young woman, and her boyfriend who lived on the streets. And it was really a compelling story. And so that story will be in the show. And we also have Jeff Bridges, the actor, who's a fantastic photographer, who I called him up and said, geez, I'd really love to show your behind the scenes Hollywood stuff in this show. Again, we got to get Hollywood in, in our LA stories. And so he said he'd love to be a part of it. So he'll have work as well. And so we've got just a list of really talented people that are going to be a part of this.
That is fantastic. I know the Jeff Bridges book. That was a wonderful, wonderful book. Well, okay. Three times the population this year. Everybody, make sure you check this out if you can get there. Again, it's April 27th, downtown LA. If you can't get there, it's going to be on the web shortly after that. Julia, thank you very much. I am impressed with your work. I'm impressed with your projects. This has been a fantastic conversation. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott. I'm impressed with you. You are a great interviewer.
Okay. I'll talk to you later, Julia. Bye-bye.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Frames. Because excellent photography belongs on paper. Visit us at www.readframes.com.